So this talk will be, roughly speaking, organized in two halves. I'm going to start talking about some work done over the last year with these people relating to determining certain protected terms in the 2B superstring theory based on duality arguments and relating them to terms in supergravity in 11 dimensions. This is a continuation of work I talked about last year at Strings 97. And then I'm going to talk about how this might relate to certain ideas which are currently of interest in the context of ADS type stuff and the connection with Yang-Mills theory. This is work done with Tom Banks and more recently with these authors here. I must say I came to Santa Barbara for a month not knowing what I'd be working on, and the inevitable happened. So that's where that second part of the talk comes from. So let me begin by reviewing what I talked about last year at Strings 97. What I talked about there was the way in which one might determine some non-perturbative structure in type 2B superstring theory, or in N theory in general, terms in particular of the form of R to the fourth, where R is the Riemann curvature. And I talked about how one could determine the structure of such terms by doing quantum calculations in one higher dimension, by looking at 11-dimensional supergravity scattering amplitudes at one loop. There's a lot of information one can get by considering the way in which these amplitudes behave if you can quantify the loop diagram on a 2-torus. So let me remind you quickly about the wisdom on that, which is very familiar. If you look at M theory on a 2-torus, where the torus is parameterized by its volume V and its complex structure omega, then by translating in the usual way between the M theory coordinates and the string theory coordinates, that means relating V and omega to the radius of the tenth dimension in type 2B string theory and the type 2B coupling constant phi, and omega, the complex structure of the torus, to the complex coupling constant of the type 2B theory, then one can translate the expression for this diagram into an expression in type 2B superstring theory, and in particular, by taking the limit in which the volume of the torus shrinks to zero, that's the limit in which the radius of the tenth dimension in the superstring theory becomes infinite, one ends up with an expression in 10 dimensions for certain finite terms which can be extracted from this ultraviolet divergent diagram. So the key point here is that although the diagram is ultraviolet divergent, if you consider the winding of this internal particle around the 2-torus in the 2 possible cycles, and then shrink the torus to zero volume, in that limit, the ultraviolet divergent terms disappear, and you're left with a completely finite expression describing, when these particles are external gravitons, an R to the fourth term, a 4-graviton term, which you can think of as being a small fluctuation around an R to the fourth term in the effective action. So what we ended up with then was an expression for the effective action in type 2B theory, which goes beyond the simple Einstein-Hilbert term, which in this notation is of order alpha prime to the zero. I've taken alpha 1 over alpha prime to the fourth outside the whole expression. So this is the usual Einstein-Hilbert term in string frame. And these are the corrections, which are of order alpha prime cubed. The power of alpha prime, of course, is very important in thinking about the last part of what I'm going to be talking about. So these are of order alpha prime cubed and of order e to the 3 phi over 2. This is the 3 halves power of the coupling constant. And they multiply these factors multiply r to the fourth and multiply a function f4, which is a function of the complex coupling. Remember, the complex coupling is C0, the Ramondwan scalar, plus I e to the minus phi. So that these are the R to the fourth terms, and then there are a large number of other terms related to them, which are of the same dimension, same order in alpha prime, and they're related by supersymmetry in a way which I might sketch later, and which can easily be determined by an exactly similar process that I've just described by considering one loop diagrams in higher dimension, in 11 dimensions. And then, of course, there are a lot of other higher derivative and higher dimension terms which I'm not going to talk about. Now the key point about this function F4 is that it is a function which is modular invariant. It's a precisely determined function, just determined from the geometry of that diagram I just described, compactified on a two torus. It's a kind of generalized Eisenstein series, a non-holomorphic Eisenstein series, which has this form. It's an infinite sum. L1 and L2, you can think of, roughly speaking, as being the windings of that loop I just drew around the two cycles of the two torus. That's where these numbers originate from. It's an SL2Z invariant function, which is crucial, of course, because at least if I transform to Einstein frame, where the graviton is inert under SL2 transformations, then we want this effective action to be SL2 invariant, and that's the way that's achieved. But this is a function of the scalar fields, so I can do an expansion of this function for small e to the phi, which means for small coupling constant, and the way one can make contact between this effective action and what we know in string theory is to write the expansion in this form. Rho 2 to the half F4 is the coefficient of r to the fourth in here, and this has an expansion which starts off with a rho 2 squared term, which would be interpreted as a tree level term in string theory, and then there's a term independent of rho 2 squared which will be interpreted as a one loop term, and then there are no other terms which are perturbative in rho 2. However, there's an infinite series of terms which look like instantons and anti-instantons, and these in fact are the instanton contributions to this function, and they're precisely determined by expanding this function. So in particular, we know what the factor out front is. There's a measure factor, mu, which is a function of the instanton number k, and this mu is given by a rather intriguing and simple expression as the sum over the prime factors of k, which I've called m, of 1 over m squared. And there's some power of the instanton action, k rho 2 is instanton action, times the instanton exponentials. And then there's a whole infinite series of terms which I haven't written down. There's an asymptotic series which represent fluctuations around the d instantons. So this expression, which we obtained by a certain amount of conjecture, and then by making contact with M theory in 11 dimensions, as I described, there has been more recent evidence that this is a correct expression based on work by these people, and this looks pretty firm now. As I said, there are many other terms which are related to this by supersymmetry, and I haven't really got time in this talk to describe that in detail. I'd like to pinpoint one of these terms for later reference. In addition to the r to the fourth term, there are terms that you can make by polynomials or monomials in the other fields of the supergravity. In particular, in a sense, the simplest term of this type is one that you make out of the fermions. There's a chiral Weyl fermion in the type 2B theory, which is called lambda, and there's a term involving the coupling of 16 lambdas, which is a bit like the Tuft term in a Yang-Mills instanton background. It's the term which soaks up each lambda, each chiral field lambda has a fermionic zero mode, and there are 16 broken supersymmetries which correspond to half the supersymmetries of the theory, and that's why you need 16 lambdas to get a non-zero term of this type. And we calculated it more recently by the same procedure as I just described. In 11 dimensions, you can write down a 16-point function at one loop, and if you choose the appropriate 16-point function, and probably only if you choose the appropriate one, that's a simple calculation. So this is 16 gravitino amplitude, but we're interested in projecting out a particular component of the gravitino, psi mu, which corresponds after the duality arguments to the field lambda in the type 2B language. So we put this on a torus, shrink the torus to zero radius, and pick out that field which corresponds to this chiral fermion after that procedure. And that involves some projection on the chiral fermion, which I won't bother to describe in detail, a projection which makes reference, of course, to the complex coordinates on the torus. But anyway, after doing that, let me skip the details, one ends up with a lambda to the 16th term in the effective action, which has a structure analogous to the structure that I just described. So it's a term which I should have also written as order alpha prime cubed, and it's got a lambda to the 16th And as a function of the scalar fields, rho and rho bar, out front, which is, again, some generalized non-holomorphic Eisenstein series. This time, it's a modular form that transforms by a phase under modular transformations. So it transforms in this way. It's a weight 12 form with respect to the holomorphic and minus 12, the anti-holomorphic transformations. And it transforms by a phase, which is, of course, just correct to cancel a phase transformation of lambda to the 16th. Lambda transforms with a phase. There's a U1 symmetry, and lambda is weight 3/2 with respect to that symmetry, so that this phase transformation of F16 cancels the appropriate phase transformation of lambda. So there's a discrete phase. The discreteness means, of course, that only an SL2Z subgroup of the SL2R symmetry of the original theory is preserved. So this is a slight generalization of the R to the fourth term, and all the other terms of the same type can be similarly calculated with not much difficulty. This again has an expansion, expanding this function F. It has an expansion which again starts with a tree-level term, tree-level in the sense that although it wasn't derived from string theory, this is a term which has a rho-squared coefficient, rho-squared being 1 over the coupling constant squared. So this is like a tree-level term. And there's a one-loop term. Again, there's no power of rho2 here, which means that we associate it with a one-loop effect. And then there are no other perturbative terms, but again, there's an infinite series of instanton-like contributions with, again, an e to the 2 pi I, k being the instanton number, rho, that's the characteristic form of an instanton, the d instanton. There's some power of the instanton action out front, and then there's a measure factor, which is the same measure factor as before. So one gets, there's a universal measure factor that comes out front of everything for each of these processes. In this case, we can't check the literature. In the previous case, the R to the fourth terms, of course, had been derived by at tree level and one loop in ancient days, but now, for this process, no one seems to have written down the tree level or one loop expression, so we hadn't actually checked these coefficients are correct. So the message is that there are a number of such terms that one can write down, that there is, for each of them, a completely specified instanton contribution, and in particular, for example, we know the measure, mu of k, which is the measure, which is the weight for a k-instanton solution. These processes are dominated by multiply charged single d-instantons, and this weight is associated with the with such a configuration. If I had more time, I would go on to describe how knowing this weight gives some information about a problem which at first sight may not seem to be completely related to this, but it is is in fact related in an obvious fashion, which is the question of calculating, of understanding why there are bound states of d particles. This connection between the instanton measure and the d particle bound state problem was made very explicit in the work of Sethi and Stern and of Yi, who looked at the 2d particle system and looked at the Witten index. And the Witten index for that system has a bulk piece and a boundary piece, and the bulk piece is determined in fact by knowing this function mu of k for the case k. Well, they looked at the case k equals 2, where this function is 5/4, because 2 obviously only has one divisor, which is 2, so the sum is 1 plus 1/4. So this expression here generalizes the SU2 bulk contribution to the Witten index for d particles to the case where you have kd particles, and then you need a separate discussion of the boundary term to get the complete Witten index and to understand why the Witten index for the d particle system in 10 dimensions is equal to 1. I should say that in that language, this measure factor is in fact identical to the zero-dimensional matrix model. It's the integral over matrices in super matrix, bosonic and fermionic matrices for the Yang-Mills theory compactified to zero dimensions, and said that way this formula has in fact been derived explicitly by integrating that matrix model by Moore, Nekrasov and Shatashvili in a very nice paper. So this formula is correct. The way we obtained it was simply by detective work, by extracting the measure from these instanton contributions. I want to rapidly now go on to the second part of the talk, however, which has to do with the connection between Yang-Mills theory and supergravity, the connection everyone's been talking about. So I'm talking about, in this case, the reason I've been talking about 2B is because here I'm going to be talking about 2B on ADS5 cross S5. I'm going to make use of these conjectured correspondences, which have been talked about so much I hardly need belabor the point, that the amplitudes for the 2B theory should correspond to correlation functions in the boundary supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory, where the string coupling goes into the Yang-Mills coupling squared. Alpha prime over L squared, where L is the radius of the anti-de Sitter space, goes into this 1 over the square root of G squared N. If you have a source, for example, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to just talk about S-wave sources in the lowest Kaluza-Klein state, the metric fluctuations in the supergravity coupled to the Yang-Mills stress tensor and the dilaton to the action, and so on. So using what I said before about what we know about the structure of the 2B theory, Tom Banks and I investigated the effect of these r to the fourth terms on the super Yang-Mills, on our understanding, whether we could learn anything about super Yang-Mills, knowing something about these terms in the supergravity theory. And the first and simplest and probably most important point is that the r to the fourth interaction doesn't, has a very special form, which I haven't really described yet, but let me do it now. When I said r to the fourth before, I was talking about a specific contraction of four Riemann tensors, which I didn't specify in detail, but now let me specify it in detail. R to the fourth is best thought of as being, in terms of an integration over the 16 Grassmann coordinates in a chiral spin of theta. So let me write it as an integral over 16 thetas of a quantity called r theta to the fourth, where r theta is a contraction of the Riemann tensor with a quartic combination of these thetas, and there's a unique such quartic that you can make with four indices that contracts into R. And it's easy to see that using Fitts identities for these thetas, that only the Weyl tensor piece of the curvature contributes. Any contraction of R vanishes because of the Fitts identity. So only the Weyl tensor comes into this R to the fourth term, but the ADS5 cross S5 background is conformally flat, which means the Weyl tensor actually vanishes. And that's the key point about many of the things I'm now saying. In other words, if you expand the curvature in fluctuations around the classical background, then the classical background piece vanishes and only the fluctuations survive, which means in R to the fourth, if you expand R to the fourth around the background, then if you take the R to the fourth term itself with no fluctuations, or one fluctuation, or two fluctuations, or three fluctuations, all of these terms simply vanish, because they all multiply at least one power of R naught. From that you deduce, firstly, you can easily see that the equations of motion for the background are not disturbed by the presence of this R to the fourth term. You have to worry about other terms as well, like the there's an F5 dependent term where F5 is the fifth rank field strength, but that only comes in with a derivative, so that term, which I didn't mention before, in fact vanishes in this background. So the background is stable against this term. I'm now talking about a term of order alpha prime cubed, so in an expansion in alpha prime, the ADS5 cross S5 background is still a solution. Furthermore, the two-point function and the three-point function in this background of the gravitons vanishes, which means that the contribution to the energy-momentum tensor correlation functions, the corresponding contributions, also vanish. The prime here means that we're talking about the interaction corrections to a leading term, which I haven't talked about, the leading term being what you get from the Einstein-Hilbert piece of the action. So that what we're saying is that there are no renormalizations, at least for the particular correlators I've talked about, which are correlators of superconformal currents. And that's a pretty cheap way of at least motivating a theorem which is known to be exact by a direct argument as given yesterday by Dan Friedman. We can now go on to discuss the non-vanishing piece. Well, the non-vanishing piece of the amplitude would be a four-graviton amplitude. The four-graviton amplitude has the Einstein-Hilbert piece, the Born terms of the tree-level terms of the supergravity or superstring. And then there are these alpha prime cubed corrections, which, as I said before, come in this particular combination. There's an alpha prime cubed e to the 3 phi over 2 times a modular function times a four-point function that you get from r to the fourth. This particular combination, using the translation that you're supposed to use between ADS and Yang-Mills, is actually an inverse power of n if I hold the coupling constant fixed. So these are non-leading effects in a 1 over n expansion at fixed coupling, and they will lead to a term in the Yang-Mills theory which will be down by order 1 over n to the 3 halves, but it will be a whole modular function's worth. There'll be a dependence on the coupling constant, which is modular invariant, which is SL2Z invariant, which of course we know there has to be because this theory is supposed to be a theory invariant under this duality symmetry, which is the generalization of the Olive-Montanen Witten duality emphasized by Sen many years ago. So that this builds this in, but it also illustrates a point, which is that this duality symmetry does not commute with taking the Tuft limit. The Tuft limit is not just a large n limit, but it's a large n limit holding g squared n fixed. And if I do that, I have to expand, I have to take g very small and expand this function f in the way I did earlier. And if I just substitute the earlier expansions into what I have here, then I get a term which is the tree-level term, which is down by a power of g squared n to the 3 halves. So again, there's a non-leading effect now in the Tuft limit rather than in the large n limit. And then there are other terms which are down by powers of n, which are the one loop term and the instanton terms. So in particular, the instanton terms are down by powers of n. So that was what that was work which I did a couple of months ago with Tom Banks. Since then, I've teamed up with some people in Rome, Bianchi, Kovacs, and Rossi, almost, well, a very colourful collaboration, apart from this guy. And what we've been trying to do is try and understand in what sense one may make closer contact between the d-instanton effect. One of the intriguing features of what I've just been saying is this very close correspondence between the d-instantons in the bulk and the instantons in the boundary theory. In fact, this correspondence is remarkably close, as I will quickly try to go through before my chairman shoots me. So let me remind you, for a Yang-Mills instanton, as you all know, the Yang-Mills field strength is given by a function of this form. It's got a scale and a position, x naught and rho naught, and eta is a Tuft symbol. So f squared is this function, but you all recognize this function because this is simply the bulk to boundary propagator. I mean, this functional form looks like a bulk to boundary propagator. The point is that the moduli space of a Yang-Mills instanton is basically ADS5, and rho naught is the coordinate that takes you away from the boundary, and that's why this function is a function of rho naught. So this is, Yang-Mills instanton contributes to f squared exactly like a bulk to boundary propagator, propagating from a point inside to a point on the boundary. There's also a close correspondence between, well, you can ask what the measure factor is in the Yang-Mills theory, and there's an integral over the moduli space, which of course is just the ADS5 measure. There's a power of the coupling constant, and there are 16 supersymmetries because even though the theory, the Yang-Mills theory is an n equals 4 theory, of course, we're talking about a superconformal theory where in addition to the fermionic zero modes that you get from the supersymmetries in an instanton background, you also, of course, get the superconformal modes, and they, since the theory is superconformally invariant, they are genuine zero modes in the theory, and so the number of zero modes that you get is precisely the same number of zero modes, 16, that we had in the d-instanton case. So there's a striking matching between the two cases. Let me just briefly say then, one can determine the contribution of the zero modes to all the other fields in the Yang-Mills simply by applying broken supersymmetries. So these are just the supersymmetry transformations. Delta lambda is related to F minus in this way. And so we know what the fermionic zero modes are in terms of the Yang-Mills instanton. And the spinner zeta is, in the superconformal theory, is a combination of the supersymmetry and the special supersymmetries, which packages together to make a killing spinner on ADS5, and I'm about to be stopped, so let me just say that the message in this transparency and the next transparency is basically that there is a very close correspondence indeed between these two calculations. One of the puzzles, of course, is... there are several puzzles, but let me just list two. one of them is, of course, the Diels-Anton has an S5 factor, and it would be very nice to see where the S5 factor comes in the Yang-Mills theory. The Yang-Mills-Anton I just talked about was an SU2 Yang-Mills-Anton, so one doesn't really expect to get an absolutely precise correspondence. In that case, one's supposed to look at the large N limit, in which one can embed a Yang-Mills-Anton in SUN in very many ways, and the whole problem is more complicated. Thank you.
Questions?
Hello. Can you show that all this corrects to the four-point function of the spread center with the various powers in 1 over n? Can you relate this to the corrections we heard in the previous talk? In the previous talk about the correction to the FF correlation function, basically?
So the question was, can you relate the four-point functions of the stress energy tensor in this talk to the correlation functions of FF that was described in the last talk?
I certainly can't. I mean, I'm not sure which part of my talk you're talking about. The 1 over n corrections had this instanton-like structure. Were they similar to the...
Any other questions? Okay, no further questions. Let's thank the speaker again.